This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Hey, I'm on vacation every single day because I love my occupation. Hey, I'm on vacation. If you don't like your life, then you should go and change it.
Charlie Carlin and I have had a nice little two-day vacation watching Chiefs training camp in St. Joe, Missouri. This is Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and we are live right in front of the field, and they're running the offenses 7-on-7 right at us, so we're seeing a little bit of everything. Mahomes had a couple of awesome touchdowns in this workout routine, hit Demetrius Harris for a touchdown, hit Travis Kelce for a touchdown, and that was right at the crossbar, so it was great to see him go up and get it. Not only did Demetrius Harris shoot a jump shot over the crossbar, Sammy Watkins got into it and tossed one over the crossbar, taking a jump shot. So maybe it's a little thing with the wide receivers and tight ends up here at training camp. My name is Brad Porter. Charlie Carlin is up here with me. Jed Marshall's back in the Rally House studios. Our training camp coverage brought to you by Mosaic Life Care, Missouri Lottery, Metro PCS, Rally House, and Kansas Sampler. So the injury update here, the injuries are piling up. We mentioned Laurent Duvernay-Tardif looked like he was getting evaluated for a possible concussion. Xavier Williams, the young man from Grandview High School, trying to make this team as a starter on that defensive line, he's also injured. They were both carted up to the main facility. And running back Damian Williams has now gone down with an injury. He's being looked at. And he's a guy who's battling for that number two running back spot, probably with Spencer Ware. And Damian Williams has looked terrific in training camp and looked okay in the exhibition game, but he was a guy who's going to make this roster if he's not hurt, and he's going to be a big part of some of the things they do. They'll have packages for him on this team, but he is hurt. So three players down today in addition to the players who were already missing at the beginning of practice. Joining us now, first time we've had this person on the show, Eamon Brennan from The Athletic, covers college basketball. Eamon, how are you on this Sunday morning?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I know you cover the college basketball, so maybe I'll make an equivalency. Do you have any problem watching those early non-conference college basketball games like we have with preseason football games that don't matter and the starters only play about 10 plays?
Exhibition games, you mean, in college?
Yeah, sure.
The season. Because, I mean, I've always been kind of a defender of the non-conference season.
Sure.
Especially, I'd say, last 5-6 years when there's been a genuine effort to make it a bit better and and a bit more impactful early on in the year. But, the equivalent exhibition games that the college basketball teams play, no.
I mean, all right.
half of the stuff is, Midnight Madness-level stuff. And they play, sort of secret exhibitions behind closed doors and occasionally some interesting notes from there. They're not allowed, coaches and players aren't allowed to talk about them, but you'll occasionally hear stuff like such and such transfer looks way better than even we thought, et cetera. But by and large, the exhibition season in pretty much every major sport I follow, including, the one that kicked off for real this weekend, the English Premier League, all the games that take place anytime before the regular season itself starts are pretty much pointless.
Right.
They're just kind of a tease because you really want to get to the good stuff.
All right, most of the guys that I work with at Sports Radio 810 WHB have a favorite English Premier League team. Rudy Salazar is an Everton guy, bless his heart. Jed Marshall, our producer, is a Chelsea guy. Charlie, what are you? What team is your team? You have a team?
I have a lot of friends that are Man United fans.
Man United.
So I like to cheer for Man City just to make them mad.
Okay. Well, I'm a Liverpool guy. So, Eamon, what is your team?
It's interesting that you asked this because I'm currently in the background on mute. Is the first post Arsene Wenger game of the Arsenal era?
Oh boy!
First Arsenal game of the post Wenger era, I should say. And
right,
it's exciting times. But yeah, I've been since I was a little kid. When I was a little kid, it was right around the Invincibles, and I was super excited.
Oh yeah,
and that was I was kind of gone forever after that. And
right,
a little kid, you're a front runner. It's like, oh man, Arsenal's so awesome. You're going to win every year. And it's, somehow become like a tour, you know. It's not like I'm a Stoke fan or something, so I can't feel too bad for myself, but it's not exactly been the most enjoyable fan experience for the last like 4 or 5 years.
Oh, man. Just don't tell me the Liverpool score from this morning because I got a DVR'd at home. I'm gonna try to not hear the score until I go.
No spoilers.
All right.
I did that for the World Cup games. It was tough, but it worked out.
Exactly. We're talking with Eamon Brennan, who writes for The Athletic, and he covers college basketball. So let's get into some of these new rules that the NCAA released last week. And look, my comment was the NCAA can't seem to make a decision without stepping on a rake. I mean, this is what happened. So apparently they've been talking to the NBA and other entities, maybe USA Basketball, about some ideas, what they were thinking about, kicking it around, and then all of a sudden the NCAA comes out with these rules about, okay, well, if a player leaves high school and goes to the NBA draft, if the NBA decides to do that, they can get an agent. If they don't get drafted, they can fire the agent, and they can come play college ball. And they also said kids in college can leave early and come back if they don't get drafted. I understand where they're coming from. And they want USA Basketball to identify the top-tier high school kids that should be eligible for the NBA draft. The NBA says, we didn't know anything about this. I mean, we've talked about it, but we didn't know this decision was coming because their collective bargaining agreement isn't up until 2023. USA Basketball says, we don't want to be in the business of evaluating who the elite players are. Our job is to win gold medals. So how did this go wrong? Why did the NCAA do this?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of things. I think there's probably been some like miscommunications. I think the primary goal, at least as it seems to me, is, or for the NCAA, was to get something out quickly. Because it's the constant criticism about the NCAA, it's age old, is that everything takes forever, and any deliberation or rules change or enforcement or infractions case takes way too long, is way too deliberative, what are they doing, et cetera. So I think there was a real emphasis after the FBI's investigation news broke that this had to be done ASAP. And so I think, you know, some things get lost in the shuffle. I think also, from the NCAA's perspective, I can understand maybe just saying, look, we have no control over what the NBA does. Their one-and-done rule has, you know, their sort of collective bargaining agreement and draft age limit has created this one-and-done situation that we have to deal with and that we are feeling the repercussions from. There's been no real movement to change it in any sort of formal or informal collective bargaining discussion even in the past, you know, 5-6 years. And, you know, I think there's probably some frustration from the NCAA side that the NBA can effectively thrust something on the college game that, you know, academians in higher institutions of higher learning don't want necessarily to be a thing that they have to worry about. I think they might even be happier, if kids could go to school right away, and then the people who want to come to college or maybe have to are there for that reason. So I think there's some frustration there. The USA Basketball thing just seems like it's a little weird to me, just not having crossed the T's and dotted the I's. I think there's been plenty of discussion with USA Basketball about the process of putting these lists together. And in a lot of ways, you can kind of make the argument that's already what USA Basketball does.
At the USA. Look who's on the team.
You're an elite high school player. They know who you are. So I get it, but I do think there are a lot of uncertainties and a lot of things that aren't just really firmed up and shored up because this happened so quickly. It's a really quick turnaround to make these kinds of sweeping changes.
And I don't want to speak for everybody. I overreact to certain stories, so maybe I overreacted to this. You go, why didn't you consult with all these people? But at the end of the day, I do like some of the ideas. I like letting high school kids hire an agent. And then if they don't get drafted, they can still come to college because I think it's better to get the advice. Major League Baseball does this. If you're an elite high school baseball player, you can hire Scott Boras as a, quote, consultant, not necessarily an agent, but as a consultant while they're still in high school. I think that's a good idea for families to get some fair analysis of their kids at what level they're on. So I do like that idea. The only problem is the NBA and the players would have to get together and decide to amend the collective bargaining agreement, and that's not going to happen for 4 or 5 more years. So getting in front of it, I see it, I like it, but in reality, it's probably not going to happen for a while.
Yeah, it's almost more of a statement of intent than anything, because you're right. Nothing about this specific aspect of their rule changes and structural changes, you know, in terms of letting designated elite high school prospects hire an agent before coming to college and see about the NBA draft and then come back through if they're undrafted, et cetera. Nothing about that is going to be possible until the NBA changes its age limit, and that's unlikely to happen anytime soon. So it's a sort of, here's another thing we will do, and we have the mechanism in place now. It's pursuant to the NBA's change, when and if that comes. And so it's really more of a statement of intent, like, hey, we're already here, now we're waiting on the NBA.
Right.
So I get it, it's value from a symbolic perspective, but relative to a lot of the other things that were included in the NCAA's release late last week, it's more symbolic than tangible, and a lot of the other ones are pretty tangible.
We're speaking with Eamon Brennan, who covers college basketball for The Athletic, which continues to just pile up a roster of fantastic writers from all over the country and all the sports. At the end of the day on this rule, I think it's high time that the high school kids should go. Baseball, you can do it. Hockey, you can do it. Heck, soccer. Sporting KC has a 16-year-old who started last week, and he's been a professional since he was 14 or 15. So I'm good with them doing it. I just don't want to see too many high school kids who don't have a realistic idea of what their talent level is do this. But if you hire the right consultant or agent, I think it works out. I'm not sure where the NBA is on this because we don't have an NBA team in Kansas City, so I don't cover it. But the NBA has benefited these many years since the rule change by having their players, potential players, get on national television every week, whether it's ESPN or Fox Sports or your local cable package of one note or another. And I think they like that. Their guys getting out there and get advertising before they get to the NBA. So I'm not sure where the NBA would come down on this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be really interesting to see, too, especially if we are to assume that no change will be made until the next CBA discussion takes place. That's a long time, and the NBA's franchises, both individually and I think the NBA collectively, has made more and more investment around its developmental league, which is now called the G League. There's
right.
more of an effort to get it out there digitally.
Right.
The NBA is really good about that sort of stuff, and there's been a push on that front. Will it ever, you know, in the next 6 years, come to rival the interest that would accompany a potential number one draft pick playing at Duke in the Final Four? No. But, you know, if they are more interested in that, then there might be more of an impetus to say, okay, we have a better system in place now where even if a kid comes in straight from high school and isn't ready and doesn't get drafted, some NBA franchise can stick him on the G League team and he can actually try and develop there as opposed to being sort of a feeder for 10-day contracts. We'll have to see how all that plays out, but it is still very theoretical. I agree that it is not to the NBA's detriment, let's say, to have
right.
All of these players coming in every year, having played in an NCAA tournament or thereabouts, and being high-profile names that NBA fans don't have to really watch that much college basketball to know who, you know, Marvin Bagley is, to name
right.
one example, that they can just kind of catch up quickly because they've at least heard of him. That's a big benefit, and this, you know, we'll have to see how much this stuff changes it.
Absolutely. We're speaking with Eamon Brennan, covers college basketball for The Athletic. One of the other rule changes that caught my attention, well, they all caught my attention because I read them, but in particular, the rules about accountability. If there are violations at a university, it's not just the coach who might get in trouble. Now we're going to bring in the athletic director and the school president. And I was stunned to hear that because, look, I don't run in circles where I hang out with college presidents. I'm not at that level. But to me, a university or college president, their job is mostly with academia and professors and raising money for the school and promoting the school, not necessarily in athletics because they hire an athletics director to do that. But were you a little bit surprised that maybe now they want to hold the school presidents responsible for violations?
I think it's surprising insofar as it seems harsh, I guess, at first glance. But I think if you see it as an extension of the general trajectory of the NCAA's much more mild adjustments to its enforcement and infractions investigation structure in the past half decade, maybe even a little bit longer, you know, a big emphasis has been just because you're the head coach and an assistant coach does something and you actually didn't know about it or you have managed to maintain plausible deniability, like, we don't care either way. It's on your watch. It happened in your program. You have to face the penalty just like the assistant coach. I think extending that to the athletic director and to the university president, maybe the president feels like a bit of a stretch because we assume university presidents have a lot to do on a daily basis.
Right, absolutely.
But I do think it makes sense insofar as you're a university president, you hire an athletic director. It's a big decision at a lot of schools because it's a lot of money on the line. You're an athletic director, you hire a coach, and the university president has say on coaches too. And those things are major hires. A lot of times will make the person the highest paid, you know, state employee in whatever state you're in, to the tune of millions of dollars a year. And I think that at least provides some impetus, along with all the other enforcement mechanisms, which are much tougher and I think give the NCAA a much better chance of getting to the bottom of things that they weren't able to get to the bottom of before. I think putting pressure on university presidents, making them have a clause in contracts and athletic directors have a clause in contracts that requires them to cooperate with NCAA investigations that essentially put their necks on the line if some, you know, a similar situation as, say, Louisville and Rick Pitino over the past couple of years. I think that makes sense from an overall enforcement perspective or, at the very least, an overall deterrent perspective because it's easy to make a decision and say, wow, this coach is going to bring in a ton of money, a ton of recruits, we're going to win championships, our enrollment's going to go up, and not think about the other side of it when you don't have to worry about those, you know, whatever future penalties may come having any impact on your job. I think it seems harsh and a little bit like a stretch, but it makes sense if you're really trying to systematically change the way athletic programs, coaches, and universities think about how they treat their major, you know, revenue-generating sports.
We're talking with Eamon Brennan here on Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB, as we broadcast live from Chiefs Training Camp in St. Joe, talking a little college basketball. Eamon, one of the rules I really do like, because the NCAA, its investigation wing is what, like 5, 6, 7 people for thousands of athletes at hundreds of schools. They made a rule change to where now, if there is a potential violation and it's discovered by the FBI, if it's discovered by a local police department, any kind of law enforcement agency, the NCAA can now use that information, whereas before they had to go do their own investigation, which I thought was ridiculous, but now they don't have to spend so much time doing all this stuff. If somebody else is doing the investigating, they can just go straight to that information and then make their judgments on enforcement from there. I think that's going to free up a lot of time for those investigators to do better stuff with their time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that goes hand in hand with some of the other changes. I mean, I think, you know, putting in some mechanism, and it's still vague and there's going to be a lot to figure out, I think, in terms of definitions of what the word complex means. But, you know, for a potential enforcement or infractions case involving what certain standards that the NCAA will define as complex, they mentioned like the possibility of core, you know, violations of core NCAA values or, you know, prioritizing, non-prioritizing academics or the well-being of student athletes, et cetera, that independent groups will be appointed to oversee those investigations and those resolutions. And that's external investigators. You know, you could see, I think, people who have former Justice Department backgrounds, so who do this kind of, you know, who are essentially independent investigators for law firms or law firms themselves. And I think that takes some of the pressure off of that handful of people in Indianapolis to know all and see all. And it comes along with a greater power to cooperate with, as you said, local authorities or federal authorities, enforcement groups in general. The NCAA, part of the big problem with enforcement is the NCAA has no subpoena power, right? So
right.
When a Louisville assistant coach is accused of arranging strippers in dorms for student athletes, then just disappears and doesn't want to talk, the NCAA can't force him to do so with the threat of legal punishment, right? Like, they just have to say, okay, well, I guess you won't talk to us. Please think about it. And
right.
So they still don't have that power, right? But working with other groups, having independent investigators who are lifelong and do this stuff at a high level, I think that changes the dynamic and changes the ability for people to just say, I'm not talking to the NCAA because I don't care if I ever coach again, or I'm here and I've already graduated, I'm not talking to the NCAA about what I got paid when I was 17.
Right.
I think it changes some of that a little bit and makes life a little bit easier when they're actually trying to get to the heart of some of these cases and getting to them quickly.
Oop, did we lose Eamon there?
I'm here.
Okay, go ahead. I think he dropped out for just a second. Go ahead and finish that thought.
I was just saying, I think the combination of all those enforcement mechanisms, and a lot of them will still have to be ironed out, I think give the NCAA and that enforcement group a lot more power, still not legal power. They're still never going to be able to investigate something the way the FBI can. But that combined with, if you lie to the NCAA, it's a big deal and you might never coach again. Those sorts of penalties and cooperative investigations, I think, will not only make it easier for the NCAA to enforce the rules it wants to enforce, but also make those enforcement cases and infraction cases move a lot more quickly. And I think that's a big deal, too, because it's one thing to get something right, but when it takes 5 years, people are still going to be angry about it.
Right. All right, Eamon, I know this isn't the most exciting and scintillating stuff in the world when you have to drill into the rules of the NCAA, but I appreciate you doing that for us. I always like to leave on a good note, and when I have somebody on the first time, I like to go through their Twitter feed and see if there's something interesting. And I found something I thought was mildly amusing. So, and you haven't tweeted in a couple of weeks, but took a screenshot of a weather forecast. It says 75 degrees, and that cloud looks like a fire bat killing zerglings, to which you responded, carrot weather is very good weather. I don't know why, but that hit me funny. I thought that was hilarious.
It's a weather app that I don't know. I saw some recommendation online for, and it's got this whole shtick where it pretends to be a robot, and you can set it to various like levels of like, I think that the top like snarkiness level is like homicidal, where it will like, I'm coming for you, human, stuff like that during the day. But mine just sets to like medium, so it just, I really appreciated the StarCraft reference, and it's got some good stuff in there. It's pretty quality.
I like it. We always like to find something that amuses us. So, Eamon, hey, I appreciate your time. I know this is the first time we've had you on, but you do a great job at The Athletic, as does all the people who come on. It's fantastic stuff. I encourage people to get a subscription to it. So thank you very much, and good luck, because camps are going to be opening here in just a few weeks.
Yeah, just around the corner. Off-season is perfectly planned. Enjoy, guys. Take care.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. That is Eamon Brennan, writes about college basketball for The Athletic, got into the new rules for college basketball. And like I said, I know it's not the most exciting stuff in the world, but someone who covers it on a daily basis can give us a little insight and maybe calm me down just a little bit on one of those rule changes. So got me back in line a little bit, which is good stuff. So Eamon Brennan, thank you very much. Plenty more still to come. We just had a great sight in front of us here at Chiefs training camp. One of the young Chiefs defensive backs, Jordan Stems, out of Oklahoma State. He's got 1 year of experience in the NFL. Dropped an interception and then had to get down and do push-ups. That's what you do. The veterans hold you accountable out here. You drop something, you're doing push-ups, buddy boy.
Who was the interception? At least who threw it?
I glanced up. It was either Henny or McGloin.
Oh, that's fine, then. Never mind.
It was not Patrick Mahomes, if that's what you're wondering. I don't have the meter, the Mahomes-o-meter out here on interceptions.
No, it's fine. If it's Henny or McGloin, that's fine.
Yeah, nah, it was bottom of the roster, guys. So, no big deal. I thought it was funny doing push-ups, and the folks got a good laugh out here in St. Joe. We will take a quick timeout coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. Andy Edwards from NBCSports.com will join us, talk a little Sporting KC. Huge win at LAFC last night, handing LAFC their very first home loss. 2-0. 3 points, and now just 3 points out of first place in the Western Conference. We're up here in St. Joe. Our Chief Training Camp coverage is brought to you by Mosaic Life Care, Missouri Lottery, Metro PCS, Rally House, and Kansas Sampler. My name is Brad Porter. Charlie Carlin is out here with me. Jed Marshall's back in the Riley House studios. Back with more right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I like that one. That's another good one. Jed, you've been nailing it the last couple of days with the bumper music. Like it.
Turns out, Brad, I know the good music.
Yeah, you do. You're better at picking the music than I am.
Fortunately, you don't ever sit behind the glass.
Well, maybe I'll have to find like an interrupt button where I can just throw in my own stuff and catch my surprise.
I played some Hall & Oates for you a few weeks ago after you went
did.
To the concert.
Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff. Welcome back to Metro Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810.
Nope, you're not
WHB.
On Metro Sports anymore.
Oh, did I do that again? Well, because I just said Metro Sports during the break. I was telling you something about Metro Sports that I...
We can just
I'm
redirect.
Just it.
It's cool. Hey, it's all good.
Yeah.
Just no one's
yeah.
really listening. We'll re-rack the intro. Coming down in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're live at Chiefs training camp in St. Joe, Missouri. Right now the team is finishing up their special teams drills, which is the sure sign that practice is soon to be over. So hopefully we'll hear from some coaches and players coming up. Our Chiefs training camp coverage brought to you by Mosaic Life Care, Missouri Lottery, Metro PCS, Rally House, and Kansas Sampler. Updating some injuries for you if you missed us earlier. Right guard Laurent Duvernay-Tardif was over in the medical tent, as was nose tackle Xavier Williams. According to Adam Teicher, ESPN, it looked like LDT was being evaluated for a possible concussion. And then Duvernay-Tardif and Xavier Williams both got in the cart and were taken up to the facility. Also, running back Damian Williams went down with an injury, and he's a guy who's been very impressive this camp. So doing the fill-in work for a couple of these players, in place of LDT, Andrew Wiley was taking his spot along the offensive line. And in place of Xavier Williams on the defensive line, Derek Nnadi was getting runs with the number ones. And you always like to see your draft picks, first-year guys, get in there and see if they can handle it. So Derek Nnadi, Jed, you were correct in saying that Derek Nnadi would probably step into that spot.
I always like being correct. It makes me feel good about myself. But, no, I mean, when you invest a draft pick in a guy that high, I know he was a third-round pick, but still a lot of people expected him to be a difference maker, and you never want to see a guy go down with an injury. But Xavier Williams, if he's going to be on the shelf for a little bit, it's nice to know that you have a young guy you can plug in there.
Yeah. So those are the injuries that just happened today. Before practice, we told you about safety Leon McCoy missing another day of training camp. Daniel Sorensen's knee injury was much worse than I think what we initially thought, and as serious as it is, somebody remarked that, I mean, it sounds J.J. Watt kind of bad, like he could be out for the season, which, look, your team shouldn't be, the success of your team shouldn't be based on Daniel Sorensen, but it's certainly disappointing that you lose a starting safety a couple of weeks into camp, so they'll have to battle it out. Eric Murray and Armani Watts have been running with the ones today, so we'll see if those two young players can make an impression. Step up. Keith Reeser and Mackington Dorlient also out of practice today. There are a couple of cornerbacks. No signs of offensive lineman Jimmy Murray or Alex Officer. No Eric Berry today. And I think that's just a regular day off. You've been going at it, you know, 4 or 5 days in a row. He's a veteran guy. He's coming back from an injury. Give him a day off. you know, he's a guy that's earned it. So no Eric Berry today. Pretty sure that's just a regular day off. And Dee Ford was back on the practice field today, but he's getting pushed by Breland Speaks. You got to earn your job every single day. All right, speaking of the Chiefs and coaches, Andy Reid yesterday spoke for about 8 minutes about training camp, and he started off his comments running down yesterday's injury list.
McQuay didn't work today, rehab. Murray didn't practice today. He's got a sore knee. Dylan Gordon, the shoulder. Reeser with a quad strain. And then we mentioned Sorensen to you with Rick. Hitchens did partial today. It was good to get him back out there. Nadi was partial. Again, good to get him back out working. Dee Ford was sick, and so we got him out of here. And then Dorleant tweaked his hamstring right, I think, the last play. So we'll just see how he is. But I talked to you yesterday about the game. There were some good things. There were some things we need to work on. The effort was good. We just got to clean up some of the fundamental things. And so we've thrown a lot at these guys. We cut it way back for the game. Again, they'll see the tape today. They haven't seen the tape yet. They'll see the tape today. Have a chance to study it and see where we need to improve. And but overall, the effort was good. So with that, time's yours.
Can you remind the fans, you know how it is, Friday morning radio, God, the offense didn't do this. Can you remind them what your primary purpose is with these early games?
Yeah, so, you know, you look around the league, and most teams are running the ball quite a little bit in the first game, especially with the starters. And my idea was to get some reps trying to throw the football, and so give Pat a little full live contact there. Give the offensive line some live contact. And so that's what we did. We knew that the quarterbacks were only in a short period of time. I wanted to maximize as much as we could. There's some things we can clean up. You need to get that on tape. You need to see it. You need to feel it. And that's what the preseason is about. I don't hide much with it. I'm as far as what we're doing, we don't really game plan for it at all. We just got to call up some plays that we feel pretty comfortable with and go with them. So.
Andy, at what point does camp become less about player evaluation, player development, and maybe more about preparing for the Chargers? Understanding those other things never really end.
Yeah, normally once you get through that third week, that third preseason game, you kind of start turning things towards that. So up to that point, you're still in camp mode and kind of grinding away.
You feel like Pat had one of his better practices up here today?
Yeah, you know what? I believe he did. I'll have to look at the tape on it, but it looked like he did some pretty good things. We had a lot of shots down the field and not a lot of short routes. We're really working heavy. We tried to do that in the game, too, just that intermediate long route thought, and not just the dink and duck and stuff that you need during the season. You're going to have to do those, but that's not what we went into the game with. We kind of did that same thing in practice.
Is it fun walking with him? The owner, Park Hunt, said last week, he said, I can detect a bounce in Andy's step. I think he's excited. Does it energize you working with a talented quarterback?
Yeah, well, he makes it that way. I mean, he's excited to learn. And so we're teachers is what we are as coaches. And you appreciate guys that look you eye to eye, and then you're able to give them something, and then they go. I always tell these guys that the greatest players I've been lucky to run some Hall of Fame players. And the one thing they wanted you to do as a coach was to give them one more thing, to even make them greater than they were, and then to go try it and try it live. And so that's that's how he's that way. He's attentive and he wants to know everything. You always hear that sponge term. Well, that's kind of where he's at in his career right now. I mean, he wants to know everything. So.
Andy, can you speak to the importance of having the alumni in today and the connection?
I love that. Yeah, I love it. That's what it's about. The history of the game. These guys are the ones that build it up so these guys can have what they have now. And, between the military keeping us land of free and these alums for setting the foundation, they're very important people. So I'm talking about the military veterans. So and then this group here. So they're a big part of what we've got going here in the National Football League. And we appreciate all of it.
Andy, I know it's early, but with the defense as a whole, how much are you hoping to see as many guys possible for Atlanta and Chicago just so that they get more of a feel with one another in a live game situation?
Yeah, the one thing we did was we got everybody in the game, you know. So,
right.
And, you know, you funnel. I mean, if you can picture that, you kind of funnel as you start getting to the season. Right now it's broad and you're playing and you're seeing combinations and mixing and matching people in there, and you don't have an extensive game plan. That's what we're doing. We're trying to give guys opportunities to play and play fast to the best of their ability. So, but we start funneling it down as we get closer, and till then, guys are going to you're going to see a lot of bodies moving around.
Right. I know the plan wasn't the way it initially went with Reggie and the fact that his knee sort of flared up, but how eager are you to see him and Hitchens together perhaps as soon as Friday, if not further
yeah.
down?
Yeah, so I think it's important. You got to be smart with it. So, mm-hmm. and that's just how it is today. So so we're doing that. And I just want to make sure these guys are right. They're coming out and practicing, and we practice fast. So it's you can get out here and do that, and gradually build himself up, and then we'll just see how it goes from there. But I'm not, you want to play, but you want to make it right.
A couple more guys. How do you factor that into your assessment of how you guys did against the run? Look at obviously guys like Kitchen Bryant.
Yeah, listen, I expect everybody that gets in there to play, and I've told you that before. So yeah, we had a lot of guys that weren't playing that normally would be in there, but if somebody gets hurt, you got to go. And so you got to step up and you got to do the right things. And that's where it'll be a great learning tool for them, right? I mean, that's and for the guys. You got to fit everything the right way. You got to make sure you're paying attention. And somebody goes down, you're in, and let's go. There was nobody holding back.
What are some of the big ones? Last two.
Yep.
As you looked at the tape, you've been talking a lot about the new rules, hitting pop people. As you looked at the tape, did you like what you saw, or are there areas of improvement in terms of playing by the new rules?
Yeah, I'll be curious when I get the reports from the league. I mean, there was probably one call there I saw that I'd like to see, see what the deal is. And there are a couple, I'm saying as far as big hits go and the head and not head and all that bit. So, and then there are a couple with, down the field rules. How sensitive are we going to be on down the field throws and that? And that helps both sides out. So it helps the offensive guys and defensive guys to know that, what you can kind of get away with and can't get away with. So, and the officials, listen, they're going to over-officiate early. They're going to let you know. So now is that a set of markers? Is that what's going to be real during the season? So that's what we need to know.
What are some of the biggest things you want Mahomes to look at in today's film session?
I'm not going to get into specifics, but he's got to get in and he's got to study the thing. He made a couple nice throws, and there are a couple that he can learn off of. Right? One in particular, there's a little bit of pressure on the other one, but you can get in and just see. It's hard in that first quarter. You got to get into a little rhythm, and then all of a sudden you're out of the game. But he can learn from it. There's some things he can learn from it, and he'll get in and do that. So.
All right. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks.
All right, that's Chiefs head coach Andy Reid from after yesterday's practice. He is speaking with the media now. Charlie Carlin has been dispatched to the media tent to talk to the coach and whichever players are made available. Camp is pretty much wrapping up for the day. They had their final special teams drills, but as always, there are players who stay after to get in extra work. A lot of the defensive linemen are hitting the, I don't know how to describe it. It's not a dummy, and it's not but it's a pad on a sled that appears to have arms. It has arms that stick out, so they work on their swim and duck moves, I guess. So several of the defensive players are doing that. Chris Jones is working on some handwork with one of the coaches. They put on the kind of like boxers when you're training. You got those gloves. Your trainer has those gloves that are flat, and then you do your combination punches on them, right? That's what they do with defensive linemen. So Chris Jones is punching and ripping, and his coaches are telling him how to, make a little improvement here and there.
Does Chris Jones ever go home?
No, he does not.
I didn't think so. Between signing
Chris
autographs
Jones,
and extra work,
yeah.
And I mean, the extra work showed off in the preseason game. I thought he actually played pretty well. You're hoping for big things out of him in year three.
Yeah, he's doing the extra work right now, and every day that I've been here at Chiefs training camp, this is my third weekend in a row, he stayed to sign a lot of autographs for the folks and take pictures and selfies and took a picture with a little baby sitting on top of his head one day, which I thought was great. He's a great ambassador to the team. If he's like, let's say you'd never met a pro football player before, and you're wondering, you know, are they nice guys? Are they mean guys? Are, you know, they're big. I don't know these guys' personalities. You could not find a better ambassador for the Kansas City Chiefs and the sport of professional football than Chris Jones, the way he's been here at training camp in St. Joe.
The Chiefs have a lot of really good guys with Eric Berry,
yeah,
and Chris Conley, Chris Jones.
Okay.
I mean, they have a bunch of guys who stand out in the community and do really good stuff and stay after practice and sign autographs. It's so cool that the community of St. Joe gets to see that, and all the people who've traveled up there over the past few weeks. It's one of the really cool things that I hope that the Chiefs don't get away from, and, you know, make it where the training camp's back at the facility and it's all on lock and key and whatnot. So, I don't know. I hope that the Chiefs continue to do that.
Absolutely. And the only reason that I singled out Chris Jones is because he's right in front of me every day. The defensive
he's the biggest
workout.
Guy, and he can hear you broadcasting, and he'll come over there and pummel you if you don't.
In fact, when he was doing his little hand drills, the rip and tuck moves that I was just describing to you, when I said his name, he looked over at me because literally it's dead silent. And so I have to speak at a certain level in order to, you know, broadcast on the radio. And he kind of looked over like, you talk about me? Nice little smile there. But he's
fortunately,
yeah,
we weren't saying bad things.
No, not at all. If I would have been, he might have come over the fence. But, no, I agree with you on training camp. And we talked to the athletic director, Josh Looney, up here at Missouri Western. We had him on last week as a guest. And we asked him about, you know, a contract extension. Because essentially what the Chiefs do with training camp is they'll make an announcement like, we have a 5-year extension, but each of those years has to be renewed every single year. So Josh Looney has a good relationship with Mark Davidson, the president of the Kansas City Chiefs. They have a good working relationship, and they'll sit down and talk about it later, but not now. So they don't usually announce this stuff that early. I wish they would do it at training camp, like come out on the like today. Today's the final Sunday here in St. Joe. It'd be nice if they, you know, if Clark or Mark. I said Mark Davidson earlier. Mark Donovan, for crying out loud. Sorry, Mark, but it would be nice if on the final day of camp, Mark Donovan would step up to the miniature podium and say, we're coming back. And I think that would be great. It'd be great PR for the team. It'd be great PR for the school. But they'll wait. And I totally agree with you, Jed. Whether it stays here or not, I don't know. But I would not want to see it go exclusively to the Arrowhead practice facility, because there you can't get the fans in. There's simply no room. And the Chiefs don't do that. They don't let fans into the practice area. And I think that would be a shame. I think it's great. I brought my boys up here a couple of weekends ago at the Stony Creek Hotel and Conference Center, and we had a great time, and they got tons of autographs from the players. And I just think it's a terrific way to get into the season and generate excitement. If your fans aren't allowed to see you except in those 4 exhibition games, I don't know. Wouldn't be that exciting to me. We're getting close to taking a break, but we want to update you on the Royals after, gosh, they could get swept today by the St. Louis Cardinals, and I don't know if anybody would really care, but the starting lineup, honestly, Jed, I mean, if it was 3 or 4 years ago when the Royals were really good, then yeah, I'd be pissed about it, but right now it's kind of like, meh.
Just the way that you phrased it was so perfectly put.
Would anybody really care? Would anybody notice? But the starting lineups are out for today, Jed Marshall. You have those. Do we have any Drew Butera at first base sightings?
No,
today?
Drew Butera is in the lineup. Here we go. Starting off playing center, leading off is Whit Merrifield. Second,
okay.
Alex Gordon in left field.
Okay.
Salvador Perez batting third,
yep.
And DHing. Lucas Duda at fourth playing first base. Rosel Herrera, everybody's golden boy.
What?
Playing second base, batting fifth. Jorge Bonifacio in right field, batting sixth. Hunter Dozier getting a start at third base, batting seventh. Alcides Escobar in the 8 hole, playing shortstop. And Drew Butera, batting 9, catching. No Mondesi, no Brett Phillips.
Wow, you get Salvi gets a day off his legs. Well, okay, let me back up. First base was Rosel Herrera?
No, first base is Lucas Duda. Rosel Herrera
is
playing second base. And Escobar's playing at short, so no way to get Mondesi into the lineup. Because why would you, Brad, with a season going nowhere, a guy who you want to find out what you have, you want to give him a bunch of days off.
Yeah,
oh, no, wait, you don't.
Yeah. He had the 3-run bomb the other night. Maybe you don't want to tire him out. I don't know.
Him running around the bases?
Yeah.
Is that the problem we're concerned about here?
I just lost my Royals page. Who's starting for the Cardinals today? Oh, good gravy. I knew I would lose it. I knew right when I started talking about the Royals I would lose my page.
How about this? How about we take a break and we get regrouped, okay, and then we come back and talk more about this?
Okay, we can do that. We'll go over the lineup one more time because, I mean, who doesn't want to drone on about the Royals starting lineup on a day they could get swept by the Cardinals? We'll do that. We'll talk. We'll kick some things around. And then coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to literally kick it around as we talk Sporting KC soccer with Andy Edwards from NBCSports.com. Thanks to the Howard Stern movie, whenever I say NBC, I have to say it like that because of that movie. Is it Paul Giamatti who told his character was pig vomit, and he told Howard Stern, you have to say it like this, WNBC. So I feel like when Andy Edwards comes on, I have to say from NBCSports.com. So we'll talk Sporting KC and the kickoff of the English Premier League season. All that still to come. We're broadcasting live from Chiefs training camp in St. Joe, Missouri. Our coverage brought to you by Mosaic Life Care, Missouri Lottery, Metro PCS, Rally House, and Kansas Sampler. My name is Brad Porter. Charlie Carlin is out here with me in St. Joe. Jed Marshall back at the Rally House Studios. Back with more right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Cynicism rocks the vine, and a time where violence blocks the summer. Another good one, Jed Marshall. Man, you're scoring touchdowns today, and not only scoring touchdowns, you're taking the jump shot over the goalpost.
I'm not a very good jump shooter. You probably recognize this from season one of The Wire.
I was trying to figure out if that's where this is from, because some of that music from The Wire you can't play unless you have a heavily edited version.
This is Michael Frante, a song called Rock the Nation. This is when Avon's cruising around in season one. I think it's episode 9 after the basketball game when he is cruising around in the excursion and whatnot, and he loses the police, and then there's the awesome scene of him walking by doing the Dikembe Mutombo to Cedric Daniels, and I think McNulty might be in the car too. It's either that or Kima. Wow, that was a weird wired tangent.
Yeah, yeah.
Greatest show ever, aside from The Simpsons.
Fantastic. I'll talk Wire any time of the day. Injury update from Chiefs training camp in St. Joe. By the way, we are broadcasting from Chiefs training camp in St. Joe. My name is Brad Porter. Charlie Carlin is out here. Jed Marshall is at the Rally House Studios. So the update on the injuries from today, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, left practice early. Possible concussion. It's listed as parentheses head, but I think that's what they mean by the concussion. Defensive lineman Xavier Williams, the young man from Grandview High School, trying to earn his starting job on this team, had a stinger. And running back Damian Williams left early with a shoulder injury. Eric Berry did not practice today, and it's because he had a sore heel. And if you've got Eric Berry and he's got a sore heel, you certainly don't want him on the practice field. So it doesn't sound serious, but sore heel, kind of important for a safety. Needs to turn. We got a couple of minutes left here. Jed, you were reading the Royals starting lineup for today against the Cardinals. And Rosell is playing second base today.
Yeah, Rosell Herrera is at second base. I'll run through it one more time real quick. Whit Merrifield playing center, batting first. Gordon in left, batting second. D.H. Salvador Perez at third, Lucas Duda at first, batting fourth. Rosell Herrera, your typical five-hole hitter, playing second base. Right field, Jorge Bonifacio, third base, batting seventh, Hunter Dozier. Shortstop, Alicides Escobar, batting eighth, and Drew Butera catching at ninth. All of this going up against Luke Weaver and Jacob Junis on the hill for the Royals. Rudy Salazar will have more on that coming up at noon.
Wow, Rosell Herrera has all of a sudden become the indispensable man. He's got to play center. If he doesn't play center, he's got to play third. If he doesn't play third, he's got to play second. Maybe we'll stick him behind the plate one day. Why not? Why the hell not?
Try and get him in all the positions in one game.
Yeah, Yeah, you know, give Salvi and Butera both the day off. I mean, you know, Drew Butera's probably worn out from starting at first base twice this week and at catcher twice this week. On that note, we will take a timeout. When we come back, Andy Edwards from NBCSports.com going to join us, talk Sporting KC, big win at LAFC last night, and also it's the opening weekend for the English Premier League. Back with more, you're listening to Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.